This morning, I want to discuss some of the spiritual lessons we can learn from the process by which a cucumber becomes a pickle. I invite the Holy Ghost to be with us as we consider the significance of those lessons for me and for you.
Wait for it.
Make a big noise playing in the street, gonna be a big man someday.
A pickle is a cucumber that has been transformed according to a specific recipe and series of steps. First steps in the process of changing a cucumber into a pickle are
Infants on Thrones. Where's my dad?
This is Infants on Thrones. The philosophies of men mingled with humor. We are the core.
Welcome back to Infants on Thrones, where pickles are made from cucumbers 365 days a year. I'm Glenn Ostlund, and we'll be hearing more from the illustrious Elder Bednar later in the episode, but first we start with Bob, reading a question we received from a listener named Lindsay. Lindsay has a 9-year-old son, and she's wondering what will happen when he turns 12. So she wants to hear us talk about what it's like to be a young man in the priesthood. So today we have myself, along with Bob Caswell.
What if an apostle bear hugs him from behind?
Oh. Randy Snyder.
That was a scoutmaster. I was a first and second counselor in the young men's, and we would put tons of pressure on these kids.
Tom Perry.
Get the hell away from my son. He's crying, you dick.
Matt Long.
You can continue to brainwash your children even when you leave the church.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And a special appearance from Matt's 14-year-old son.
I guess.
So with no further adieu, take it away, Bob.
Okay, here we go. Thanks for all you guys do for the podcast. I love listening. One thing that came up last week was something I thought that might be a good topic, so I thought I'd just pass it along. My 9-year-old son is very much a thinker. He doesn't believe in the literalness of Mormonism, nor does he believe in a heavenly father. He is reading Richard Dawkins' book, The Magic of Reality, and loves it. But because my husband really values the community of Mormonism and is somewhat figuring out his own faith journey, our family continues to attend church in order to keep the family together. I tried leaving a few years ago, and it just started taking our marriage in a direction I didn't want to go. So anyway, back to my 9-year-old son. Doesn't buy Mormonism, talks to me a lot, asks why, many questions. We have great discussions. I'm grateful. Last week, though, he asked me if he will have to pass the sacrament when he turns 12. That was something I had never thought of before. He said he really doesn't want to pass the sacrament and he doesn't want to serve a mission. And I got to thinking about all the other things that are expected of these boys once they turn 12. Priesthood, home teaching, fast offering, sacrament prep, sacrament passing, blessing, missions. What happens to these boys if they politely decline to participate in any or all of these things? Triple question mark. Is that an option? Quadruple question mark.
Because I'm not a man, I really don't know how to help prepare my son for young men and the issues he may face. This is all assuming that we'll still be attending. Hopefully my husband will see the light before we have to really deal with this. If you guys have thoughts, I'd love to hear them.
Wow. So my first thought is there's not going to be an easy middle road. I don't have kids, but I just remember being a 12-year-old in the church. And I have vague recollections of people who were encouraged to come. And it was like, hey, you should be friends with that guy, that kid over there who has major problems because he's not going to do any of the other stuff you do. But we're throwing him in the same room for some reason. And it was weird for him and it was weird for us. It's just going to be freaking weird for this 12-year-old kid if it comes to that. So let's
talk to Tommy.
Are you talking to Matt?
Different Tommy. Oh.
My son.
No, Tom hasn't been Tommy since he was 12.
Yeah, that's right.
Since he refused to pass the sacrament.
Isn't that who you got, Tommy?
Yeah.
Let's talk to Tommy.
All right.
He's a lot closer. I mean, we all can chime in later about, you know, our experience as valiant members of the Aaronic priesthood, how we looked at other less valiant members. But Tommy is a less valiant Aaronic priesthood holder, is he not?
Yeah, he's at 14 now.
He's 14, so he's really he's a lot.
At one point, he was 12 and anxious to get the priesthood and pass the sacrament. So he doesn't know what the topic is, but you can ask him questions about what he felt then and kind of as he transitioned out. So I'll give it to him.
Hi.
Hi, Tommy.
What's up, Tommy?
Hey. How are you?
We're great. How are you?
Pretty good.
So when you were 12 years old, describe where you were in your belief.
I just kind of followed along because I was brainwashed all that time.
But how do you know you're not brainwashed now, Tommy?
I don't know, because we looked into stuff, I guess. I don't know.
But
sounds like a brainwashed response to me.
When you say you're brainwashed, though, you were a believer at the time. Like in that moment when you're 12, you didn't know you were brainwashed, right?
Right.
So
you kind of went along with, oh, this is true.
You were excited to be a deacon and be able to pass the sacrament?
Yeah, because it was like something new. So it was like, oh, now I get to walk around in that quiet time and not be all bored.
And Tommy, when you were like 10 and 9, did you look up at the deacons that were passing the sacrament? And you thought that some of them were pretty cool and you're like, I'm going to do that someday. That'll be awesome.
I guess. Probably.
Yeah.
I just thought it was cool passing the thing that was blessed. And
yeah.
You know?
Okay. So my question to you, Tommy, is when you, by virtue of the things that happened with your family moving away from the faith, when you went from someone who was seen as a good, stalwart deacon to someone who wasn't as stalwart, did you see a change in how people treated you around you in the church? Does that make sense? Was that too complex of a question?
I like that you said stalwart a couple of times.
Yeah. Okay. So when you were seen as someone who was a total believer, and then when you started to not be a believer because your family started to move away from the belief, were you treated any differently?
What do you mean by treated differently? Like how treated differently? Just in any way or like?
Like just not accepted or, guys didn't want to joke with you or hang out with you. I mean, did you ever have a moment where everyone else was passing the sacrament or doing blessings or whatever and you weren't participating, but you were still going to church and you felt like kind of, not part of the main scene and sort of left out? Or did you just skip straight to not going after you stopped believing?
I didn't really care whenever I didn't do it. But they didn't. My ward, the only guy that was my age was like this total, like, nerdy kid who stunk and, like, had bad BO and, like, I didn't want to be next to him. So he was, like, the only one that was, like, my age that would. So I didn't really care what he thought. And then I had like two other friends that was an age or a year older, and they didn't really care that I didn't do it or anything.
You're in a really shitty ward.
Yeah. Nerdy kids.
Do you have any friends at school, Tommy, who are, they're Mormon and they know that you were raised Mormon, then maybe they're in different wards, but they're part of your group, part of your friends that you hang out with?
Wait, sorry, say it again?
Do you have Mormon friends?
I do. I have some, like, extreme Mormon friends, but then I have some that are kind of, like, cool Mormons.
Oh, the
cool Mormons.
So what's the difference between the extreme Mormons and the cool Mormons?
Okay, so extreme Mormons, they, like, shove their religion down your throat, and it gets kind of annoying. And then the cool Mormons, like, sure, they believe in everything, but they don't really care what you believe in. And then, so they're just kind of like going along with what you think is right. And then they don't really care what you do because that's not their life.
Yeah. These extreme Mormons, did they ever give you any crap for not being extreme Mormon yourself?
Yeah, because even whenever I was like religious and all that, they're always like, oh, you should go to church every single Sunday. And like, you know, so that was kind of annoying. But then whenever we left, they were just like, oh, you should go back to church. It's going to be so good for you. But
yeah,
I didn't really care. What, so yeah, they were.
What were your leaders like? Did you have cool leaders? Like, in, did you do scouts and all of that stuff? Are you still doing it?
No, ever since we left, I just stopped doing that because I didn't want to be with anyone in the church because they're so boring. But my leaders were not cool at all.
No.
They were like almost like that one kid that I said that was my age, but
they smelled
40.
Yeah. Whoa, that's old.
They were the smelly kid with authority.
Yeah. So what did you think, Tommy, when you started realizing that your mom and dad weren't really all that interested in church anymore? You know, like your dad stopped going to church for a while, right? But you guys would still go. You'd go with your mom. Was that weird for you?
Well, yeah, kind of. Well, finish what you were going to say.
No, I just want to know what that was like for you. I want to know if you thought that your parents were doing something wrong, or you know, what did you think when they stopped going to church?
Well, whenever they started like looking up stuff and all that, I kind of like, well, I don't know, how do I say this? So like they asked the stuff like, do you think this is true, or like how else could you look at this? Mm-hmm. And then it, if you started like looking into it more, it made more sense that it's not true than how it is true.
Mm-hmm. So you were brainwashed by your parents.
Right. Yeah. Right. Then, right.
They wouldn't give him an allowance if he still thought it was true.
Well, if you frame the question just right,
Yeah. Well, I guess one of the things I'm wondering, so somebody asked us, Tommy, you know, this woman named Lindsay, and she has a son that's he's younger than you are. He hasn't turned 12 yet. I think how old did she say he was? He's like 10?
Nine.
Yeah. Okay. So he's still pretty young. But she's just wondering what's going to happen when he becomes a deacon. You know, he turns 12 because he doesn't really believe. He just goes because his dad wants him to go. And so she's wondering what's going to happen when he turns 12 and all of his friends are passing the sacrament, but he doesn't really want to pass the sacrament. He doesn't really want to be ordained to the priesthood. Is that going to be hard for him? Is there going to be like peer pressure from maybe the extreme Mormon kids, you know, like you talked about before? So did you have anything like that?
I don't know. I think like whenever the church president or bishop?
Yeah.
Whenever he called you in to like talk about like, oh, do you want to do this? And is this the right choice to you? I mean, it was like scary because I was like little and it's like a big guy with big authority talking to me. So it was a little pressure-ish, I guess. But back then I was just kind of like, go with the flow and like do do what was right, I guess, and what everybody was doing
and let the consequence follow.
Sure.
Yeah, cool.
So yeah, if that answered your question.
Yeah, that's cool, man.
Well, thanks, Tommy.
Yeah, thank you.
Your dad's pretty awesome.
I know.
Yeah.
He is. Bye, guys.
Bye.
See ya.
Yeah.
So that's just,
you know, an indication. What?
You can continue to brainwash your children even when you leave the church.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Apparently.
It seems like Tommy was kind of a bad example because he never really gave a shit.
Well, that's the problem with talking now. You know, in retrospect, he wants to believe that, but. I mean, I remember passing the sacrament for him was a big deal, and he loved doing it. But once he did it, it was kind of like, I've done it. I don't really care. So it was just the experience of being kind of having the attention on him. And this, you know, you're a priesthood holder. It's a big deal. And that was a big deal. But then again, it became the 2-3 times, and it was like, yeah, this is just boring. Who cares? So
it also sounded like he didn't have a lot of social pressure from peers and his leaders, because if he had like really involved leaders in his life and he highly respected and considered them friends, and if he had like a group of friends in that same age bracket that were moving around with him, I think there'd be a lot more pressure.
Yeah, and that definitely was lacking. I think he told you that he does have a bunch of friends from his school that aren't in the ward that he's friends with, but that just wasn't really an issue with his peer group there. You know, so yeah, maybe that's what facilitated it for my kids. But it was an easy sell for him just to kind of present certain ideas, and he is also very socially. Liberal, I guess, as far as social issues, and so that was an easy transition out as well. Just conceptually, this isn't, you know, whether it be gay marriage or other things, I think kids his age just understand that's not fair. That doesn't make sense.
Well, I think the other difference from, you know, Lindsay's question to us is that he had both parents in you and Kristen that were kind of leading the way in those socially liberal issues, leading the way out of the church, and it was okay. There wasn't any pressure from you guys. Certainly not any conflicting pressure with you guys going in different directions. Whereas, you know, this 9-year-old kid that we're talking about, when he's 12, he might feel pressure from his dad to go to priesthood with him. You know, like I remember that was a huge thing for my dad to take me to, you know, when I turned 12 and I was the oldest kid, and he's like, I can take you to the priesthood meetings and general right. sessions of conference and, you know, things like that. And
then you become their home teaching companion.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Right. Right. All these things where if I would have said, no, Dad, I don't really want to do that, you know, I would have gotten a lot of crap from him. And I'm sure there were people in the ward, like I don't have any experience that I can remember where there were kids that just said, I don't want to pass the sacrament. I don't want to do all that stuff. But I can imagine that a leader would look at that and be really concerned, because you can't just choose to not be obedient to your callings and things. You know, you're supposed to magnify your callings, and you're supposed to, do what you're told. So I think they would be really concerned. They'd meet with them, they'd talk with them, they'd do everything they could to try and get them to pass the sacrament and do stuff. That's my thought.
No, I think you're right. The difference, I guess the difference is that I was running interference for him before we ever got started. So they, any deference they gave to him, or any, any time that they wouldn't put pressure on him, was really more a reflection on not wanting to piss me off, and recognizing that I had already set down some boundaries for my family, and they were going to abide for them. So yeah, in retrospect, now that you say it that way, I did lay down some very clear kind of ground rules. So when they would approach him with deference and say, hey, do you want to pass the sacrament? And he'd either say yes or no, depending on that mood that day. They were just kind of happy that we were there. So yeah, no sense in rocking the boat. But yeah, if it's just the kid doing that without having that someone running that interference for them, their adult or a parent, it's going to be really, really difficult. And I think you're going to get questions, and you're going to probably get called into the bishop and have those. If you haven't had those boundaries where you don't talk to my kid alone or without me, it'd be tough for a 12-year-old.
Yeah, and like, I think so. When my I'm sorry, Bob, but when my dad was a kid, when he was like 12, he didn't really want to have anything to do with the church. His mom was dead since he was 6, and his dad wasn't religious at all. But he lived in Utah, and he had a young men's leader that wouldn't take no for an answer. My dad tells a story like the guy saved his life, and I'm actually glad that guy did that, because I wouldn't have been born if it hadn't done that. But you know, he was just doggedly persistent, and then I fast forward to my experience. I was a scoutmaster. I was a first and second counselor in the young men's, and we would take these kids whose parents really were ambivalent or inactive or just didn't care, and we would put tons of pressure on these kids to come out. Now, what makes this complex with the person who emailed us is that leaders are, you know, this kid has a mom who doesn't want to make waves and a dad who's pushing for it. So they're going to see that as license to put pressure on this kid. Do you guys agree?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think yeah. this is
in
also
fact, they're going to call for it. They're going to be seeking those leaders' influence on his life.
Right, and they're probably going to try to team up with the dad, and that's what she's facing.
Right.
But I'd say, you know, in my experience, what couples do when one person is pro-church and the other wants to leave, and already in what Lindsay said, she thought about it or brought it up, and it was taking their marriage in a direction that she didn't want to go. And so now they're still together and going to church, but her son is reading frickin' Richard Dawkins, which is a pretty unique situation. Okay. So
just
we don't
to
know
clarify,
the full story.
Just to clarify, that he's not reading The God Delusion. He's reading a book that's pro-science for kids. That's a totally different animal than The God Delusion.
Right, but thinking of like a Mormon who's active, it's kind of a slippery slope. But so I don't know the full context because I would interpret this differently or say you know my opinion differently if this was being done on the side and you know his father has no idea that he's interested in this in Dawkins' book for kids, which is in one sense harmless, but an active Mormon could think otherwise, or if his father is completely aware and completely supportive. But, you know, you guys with kids probably have more experience here. But from what I understand, one option that kind of keeps the peace oftentimes is just to let the kid decide. So mom can be herself, dad can be himself, and then the kid decides. You know, if he wants to go to church, great. If he doesn't, he doesn't. Is that a viable option? Or do the parents have to get together and, like, decide behind the scenes how they're going to, you know, force their child one way or the other?
But I don't think it's just up to the parents though. When
well, that's
he's
what I'm
in, saying. Yeah, like when he's sitting in a Sunday school class or young men's, you know, deacon's quorum, and has leaders who feel very genuine, sincere concern for this kid because they can see the directions that his parents are going, especially the mom. They're concerned about the choices that she's making in her life, and so they see it as their role that God has given them to be a good example to this kid.
But I did want to say something about Glenn. That also advice is to be aware that these bishops and these leaders do take this idea of stewardship very seriously. And that's something that as a parent, you have to take control. And that's the idea of intervention and however that she feels comfortable doing, she has to do that. I mean, I had a conversation with a very loving bishop who I really respect and just think the world of, not a hardcore, just an old farmer that's doing the best he can, sat me down. I explained to him kind of what was going on, and he kind of said, well, you understand I have responsibility over your family. And we kind of had this moment where I kind of had a grin, and I made it very clear to him that if he really believes that, and if he attempts to act on that, he doesn't want to see the reaction. So I cautioned him to be careful of the things he says, but certainly be careful of how you interact with my family if you believe that's true. And I tried to be very diplomatic with him, but I think the point was made. Essentially, I told him the day he crosses me is the last day he ever sees us here. And now, not saying she can take that position, but
yeah, that's easy. That's easy for you as a very strong force in your family, and everyone in the family is kind of on board anyway. But she's facing a husband in opposition to her, and who could team up with these guys who take their stewardship very seriously. And so, right.
and that's what I'm saying. To the extent she can intervene, I think she needs to have conversations both with the bishop, hopefully have some agreements with her husband, and with the son to say, here's some things that are unacceptable as it pertains to interacting with authority figures with our children. And this is something that I think should happen just to everyone. This, again, the idea that one-on-one interviews with adults and you know, children are going on is just makes me squirm.
But she can't do that very easily because she's already explained that she tried pushing the envelope a little bit and now she wants to keep the peace. And so the way the church works is if you're a woman, especially, and you go and you want to make some kind of statement to priesthood leaders as to how they should treat your son slightly differently for whatever reason, that's just going to end up right in your husband's lap, who you're trying to keep the peace with. You don't get to do that and have it be told in confidence independent of your husband. So
right,
that's kind of...
I think what she should do is empower her son and let him know, you know what, it's okay. One of the things we did is we told our kids it's okay to placate them. When they ask you questions, just say yes, and then we'll come back and we'll talk later. That's what that was my strategy with my son as it pertained to the masturbation question.
Just say yes.
Whatever the question was, just say no, and we'll talk about it later. You don't have to answer honestly.
So you're saying that...
Just say, do you masturbate? No. Do you, what was, yeah.
Do you, so you're saying it's okay, just pass the sacrament, or it's your decision. You can go with the flow, but you don't have to do it because you adhere to their standards. If you feel like you need to do it, little Jimmy or whoever, you can do it if you think it would help, you know, socially, but don't feel compelled to. Just, you know, depending on how his support group and friend structure is, if it's more at school or at church. If it is at church and it's, you know, it's going to be weird otherwise, don't take it so seriously and just go along with it. Or don't. You can, so empower the son is what you're saying, and it's okay.
Absolutely.
if it comes across as kind of one of those, you know, lying for the greater good sort of scenarios that kids especially can sometimes have a hard time with. Like, but mom, I'd have to like lie, or I'd have to do something under a false pretense. I mean, 9-year-olds maybe don't think in those exact terms, but it's kind of a little bit of a reverse mental gymnastics. That's you know, ironically still mental gymnastics dealing with the church, even if in a good way. Is that kind of what I'm getting?
That's what I recommend to her in her situation. And you can deal with it, to empower the kid in a number of different ways. That way, to give the kid outs, automatic responses to either questions, or if he's brought into a room with a leader, he should be empowered to say, I'd like my mom. I'm not comfortable. I don't want to talk to you alone. Or my mom. Or we made it our fault. Tell them that we have instructed you to do this. So it's not you saying it, but you'd say, my mom says, or my dad says, to come get, you know, that I'm not supposed to do this. Can you go get them? And that way that's, the burden's kind of off them and back on you. And if she could do something like that to try to empower the kid and provide that intervention, that's the only way to survive this. Otherwise, the pressure of the peer pressure and the priesthood pressure, the leader pressure,
stewardship.
It is going to be overwhelming, and it's too much for, I think, a 12-year-old, absent an absolutely dynamic, super confident 12-year-old to kind of deal with.
But what if what if an apostle bear hugs him from behind?
Oh. let's get to that in a minute.
So okay. There's two things Lindsay mentioned she was worried about, that her son was worried about. He doesn't want to pass a sacrament. He doesn't want to go on a mission.
Yeah.
She said he's a deep thinker. So we got a smart kid here. So my advice to her would be to talk to the kid, you know, because if he's a smart kid, you can teach him the principle that morality is rarely black and white. It's mostly gray, nuanced, and incident dependent. You know, every situation needs to be taken on its own merits. So if he doesn't want to pass a sacrament, my advice to her would be, you know what? You're providing a service. The bread needs to be passed around, right? Otherwise, we'll never get to those amazing talks. And so all you're doing is providing a service. At the same time, you're making your father very happy. You don't believe in any of the stuff that's going on that's tied to the sacrament. Just go ahead. I mean, this is not a battle that needs to be won to win the war.
Right.
So just... don't make things harder for yourself than they have to be. Pass the sacrament. It's not a big deal. It's not that hard. Going on a mission, that one's even easier. You know what, son? You're a big thinker. You're a deep thinker. You're going to want to go off to college. Once you're off to college, you're on your own, man, and there's no pressure from the war.
To make that decision today. Don't fixate or have anxiety over having to make a decision that can be put off later. And
right.
You can empower him by doing that. And I love what Randy said about putting a different spin on it rather than having some metaphysical or priesthood bent. Hey, why not help people get the bread that they find meaningful? It's a form of service. I love being able to give that kid something he can really grab onto and say, okay, yeah, there's some value in doing this to other people that I may not agree with, but there's something tangible there. So I think that's, I mean, that's great.
Do you guys ever, though, worry that, this is me being a paranoid non-father, that saying shit like that, which is great on the surface, is just going to bite you in the ass because the kid's going to like repeat it like a robot to the wrong person? And not like a robot, I shouldn't say it that way, but you know how kids, you say something that's powerful in one way, but you just hope to God they never say it in front of the wrong person, and this is that type of thing? Or is that just something you have to live with every day as a parent?
I think this kid, in this one instance, this kid seems a little too smart to be that clumsy.
Well, and you know what I deal with is I try to deal in things that are real and things that are true. And
I think potential, that
if it's something that's true that they're saying, I don't shy from it. If they were to say something like, "Oh, I'm not sure if there's really any, you know, but I like doing it because it's a service," I think everybody can kind of put a good spin on that and wrap their arms around that. Whether it be a leader, they'll hear what they want to hear in that.
Right.
And they'll say, "Wow, isn't that great that kid said that?" And I found that a lot of ways with as a Sunday school teacher, I taught for at least 2 years as a non-believer, and the principles that I would kind of talk about were kind of liberalized, and they were very fringy. But what I found is people really got what they heard, what they wanted to hear, and so they would say, "Oh, that's really inspiring. That's really great." And I think that'll come across when the kids articulate these higher end concepts like that, like service and helping other people. And I like to be with my family. You know, why do you like to come to church? Because I like to be with my family. Well, what you're saying is what? I hate church, but I'll be with my family. And people will be like, "Yeah, isn't that great that church brings family together?"
Well, and I think that works until like a leader like pins them down and grills them. And I like what you said earlier, Matt, about empowering him and giving him the permission that, you know what, if they ask you something that you don't want to answer, you don't have to answer. Just say, "You know what, I'm not comfortable talking about that." And you don't, and that way you haven't said anything negative, but you've empowered the kid to have a discussion with a leader on his own terms.
And we used to always tell our kids, any question you don't want to answer, your response should be, "But talk to my parents about that. Will you talk to my dad about that?" Now, it never came there. But this is a concept that parents should be dealing with their kids everywhere. I mean, you want to teach a respect for authority, but not an absolute deference to authority. The deference to authority, those are the kids who end up becoming physically and sexually abused because they're not empowered to tell these parents, "No, this is my body. You know, no, I'm going to tell my mom. I'm going to tell my dad." You have to empower kids at a young age for all these things, and then you just extend it to here. Those things shouldn't go away and can't go away just because you're dealing with a religion or with a religious person. And you can still be respectful, and you can be kind, and you can be even deferential to other people's beliefs and his father's beliefs, but still maintain kind of that integrity and those boundaries that are these kids and that this kid can embrace. And I love Dawkins talking about how children, there are no Mormon children, there are no Catholic children, there are children of Catholic parents, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And that's what, if she wants to, this Lindsay or anyone can communicate that to this kid. And if you decide that this is what you want to do, then I will support you in that. But until that, you have a right to your own brain, just like you have a right to deal with your own body the way you deal with it.
Hey, Tom.
What's up?
We haven't heard you for a while, man.
Yeah. I mean, we're all talking about this, but we're all pretty far outside of it. And I think you're more... You probably have more in common with Lindsay than any of us do.
Well, no, I mean, I've just been listening. I think the advice that was given is spot on. I love what Randy and Matt had to say, and I don't know. I'm nervous about it too, but I guess the only advice I would say, and I know I'm going to kind of sound like an echo here, but I would just say build a good rapport with your son. And if he needs to just kind of go with the flow to keep the peace with the father or whatever, or the rest of the siblings and whatnot, just as long as you're planting seeds, you know, promote critical thinking. It sounds like he's already on track for that. So that's perfect. And that's kind of what I do with my son, is I just pull him aside and we have some heart to heart talks. We go out and get an ice cream or something like that. And I just say, hey, you know where I stand, and I'm an open book, and I always tell him what I think. And if I can build a relationship where he feels like he can come to me with anything, then I can be that safe zone for whenever things get awkward and weird and whatever. And that's all I can hope for. If he decides that he wants to go more and more into the church for social pressure, or if he has, that's one of my biggest concerns, actually, is that one of the leaders takes him under his wing and befriends him.
Because becomes like a surrogate dad to him that's a strong priesthood holder.
Yeah, because we talked about that. Because a lot of them...
fills the gap that you can't fill.
Right. Exactly. Because a lot of them do feel that way. They're like, I'm going to take a special care for this boy, and because you know his dad's not there spiritually, and so they go above and beyond and try to fill that role, like you said. That's one of my major concerns, because when I was growing up, what actually pushed me into a mission was, one, a really, really, really careful seminary teacher that kind of paid special attention to me, and then two, I had a teacher in my priest quorum advisor group that really became a mentor to me. So, your dad
wasn't against you going on a mission, right?
No, he was pretty ambivalent about it. But he wasn't like always there like they were very attentive. They were there with all my scouting stuff. You know, they would call me all the time. They would stop by. I mean, for as active as it is when the young boys get into priesthood, I mean, with scouts and all that stuff, it becomes very, very active. It becomes a big part of their life. So it's a big deal.
You know, my experience with the youth leaders, I guess, was a little different. And this gives me a little hope, I guess, for people like Lindsay, is that the youth leaders that I had growing up and the youth leaders that are in my ward for the most part, and I was involved in young men's for 6 years, and as being very active, and the approach that they all took was just kind of, we're just happy you're here. So we were less about being hardliners, and the leaders that I had were the people that were the hardliners were kind of few and far between. Whereas the guys, most of the guys who are called the youth, I think, are guys who, you know, they'll do the activities. They can get along with the kids. They can, do these types of things and aren't just trying to push. So that's my hope, I guess, is that we'll encounter better leaders that just are glad they're there rather than really trying to emphasize, you got to do this and you've got to do that. One quick story about my bishop when I was.
No.
No, what happened?
No, we're not getting that story.
One quick story.
So what I was waiting for his silence. I didn't drop him intentionally, but I was going to say, I hope that none of those leaders are like Bednar.
Were they?
And that's nice segue.
Do you know what happens when you get this close to the line?
No.
A sin that's right here doesn't look that bad, does it? Right where my shoe is. So, oh, that's not that big of a deal. Okay, take just a little step over here. One more step. Just a little more.
So, apparently, I don't even know the context, to be honest. This just, like, came out of nowhere in my Facebook feed and Mormon forums and John DeLynn posting it and, you know, combination of all those things. But Bednar gave some sort of fireside chat, and it looked like it was kind of a town hall format, like it was a political debate or something. He's walking around
like
in a circle.
Like an open forum Q&A. It's weird.
Yeah. Did you guys all catch the looks of awe and admiration of every person in that audience?
Not just that, but Bednar picked up on it too. He's like, don't be nervous.
And don't be nervous, okay? Which just made you more nervous.
Now that I said it, you're going to be nervous.
Yeah.
Dude, yuck.
Oh, my gosh. That's
horrible.
I was cringing through the whole thing.
He's walking around in this circle, and a little boy asks a question that's just basically like,
How do you read scriptures if you don't want to, basically?
Well, his exact question was,
if you, like, stop reading the scriptures, what is the best way? How is the best way to get back into reading them?
Because my friend was wondering. That's never happened to me. And then Bednar uses that as an opportunity to drag him out on the floor and walk through a visual exercise to make his point.
And when you say walk through, he did it in the most spit-shined, beautiful shoes I've ever seen.
Yeah.
An apostle can never be seen in public with scuffed shoes.
That would be just tragic.
Okay, but did anybody else pick up on the fact that Bednar turned this kid into an object lesson, literally? The poor kid looked like he was ready to cry. I couldn't tell if he was
He was crying.
He cried through the whole thing.
Oh, my gosh. I was just... Oh, so uncomfortable to watch that. Ugh.
Well, let's walk through the object lesson.
Yeah.
Okay, so he grabs this little cute little 12-year-old boy who's in awe of an apostle.
I want you to come right over here, okay? All right. Do you see the end of this rug right here?
And he holds him at the edge of that rug and says,
that's a line. And over here, we're going to call this the devil's territory.
This line is the line between the Lord and the devil.
The devil's territory and the Lord's territory.
Right. Now, which one do you want to be in? Oh, the Lord's.
Where would you rather be? Over there or over here? Yeah, that's a lot better. All right.
And so he says, now, when you start to do things to get you in the Lord's territory, like what? Read the scriptures, go to church, don't be an asshole to your siblings.
Yeah, that's word for word verbatim right there.
And every time you read your scriptures, you can take another step deeper into the safety of the Lord's territory over here. So come on with me. Feeling better over here? Mm-hmm. And you're not even interested in looking over here, are you? I don't want to see what's over there. All right.
Read the scriptures, go to church. And then he says, when you do that, you turn your back on the devil's territory.
Yeah, they're walking more and more into the middle of the carpet.
And you don't even look over there. You're not even interested in what's going on in the devil's territory.
Yeah, it's like it's not even there.
All right, now, question. What happens if you stop praying and you stop reading the scriptures? All of a sudden, now see, you're still way over here, but now you're turning this way. Right? You don't even want to turn this way because I'm pushing you a little bit and you don't want to go. All right, now. And so you have another day where you don't read, you don't pray, and you're rotten to your brothers and sisters. Now we're going this way. Okay?
Yeah.
Okay. And now all of a sudden you haven't done those things for a week. Are you liking this? Do you like going in this direction?
I used to teach this as a missionary and to the youth that it's not where you are. If you're trying to climb the ladder to heaven, it's not where you are on the ladder, it's which direction you're facing. And so this is all just, I mean, this is a very common object lesson. It just was a little more creepy with the guy manhandling the 12-year-old.
Yeah, well, a little bit.
It was all about fear. It was, if you're over here in God's territory, you're safe. If you're over in this, you know, you're not safe because this is the devil.
Yeah, booyah, bitches.
Okay, so I showed this to my 13-year-old daughter, and she had the most interesting response to it. She said, you know, even if you're reading your scriptures every day and doing all these things, you're still not safe.
Right.
That does, you're not safe. You know, so there's still bad things that can happen to you. You could still make a mistake and She said something like, even if you're reading your scriptures and you're praying all the time, you could still commit murder or something like that. And then you think it's okay. Yeah. You think it's okay because you're still doing all these other things that you're supposed to. I'm like,
oh my God,
awesome.
From the mouths of teenagers. Holy shit. That is, my mind didn't even go there.
Right.
Yeah,
my mind was
absolutely.
all about manipulation. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Matt.
I'm sorry. That's how teenagers think. They get it. They get the new. They are much more nuanced and clever than this black and white banal bullshit.
Yeah.
Are you liking going in this direction?
No.
So what is it that keeps you going in the other direction? When you read? When you pray? See, because you're going this direction now, because you're not doing that stuff. You haven't done anything horrible, terrible, really wrong. You just haven't done the right things that keep you way back over there. Do you like being this close to the line?
Can we call him the Pickle Prince? Can we just...
Yes, yes, the pickle talk. That was awesome.
Oh, I don't know that.
So the more you do the things that the church wants you to do, you dig deeper. But if you stop doing them, then you start to turn back towards the line. But you're still deep in the church, right? Doing all these stupid things. And then the longer you stop doing it, the more you take steps towards the border. And then this was the best part. He says, now you're at the border, and this little tiny sin, like you couldn't have done that sin, like Glenn, your brilliant teenage daughter mentioned. But apparently you can only do a little sin once you stop reading the scriptures and praying. You cross over that border, and then that little sin takes you to a new perspective, and now you can do bigger sins and bigger sins. And then he had the kid cross into the dark side.
Okay. Now you try to get back over on the other side. Can you get over there?
No.
For an old man, I'm pretty strong, huh? You're not even trying very hard. Come on.
And then he fucking bear hugged him from behind and wouldn't let him move.
Well, let's say he says, okay, now step over the line. And the kid's like, come on, step over. And then he essentially pushes him over. The poor kid is like, oh, it's happening.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
And then he bear hugs him and says, you can't move, can you? You know why? Because you lost control.
All right. Now, remember what got you over here? You came all the way from back over there to right at the edge of the line by just not doing the things that you know you should do. And once you get over here, you're not in control anymore. Okay?
And I'm role-playing. I am the devil in this experiment.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it was bad.
Yeah.
And that's when the kid went from sniffling, crying to bawling. If you watch the video.
And at no point...
Yeah, even before that... Sorry, before that, I liked when he asked the kid a question, and the kid didn't give the response that he wanted, and he said, now listen to my question.
Now think about the question.
because Bednar asked a question where no was the right answer for the first compound question, but the wrong answer for the second compound question.
And now all of a sudden you haven't done those things for a week. Are you liking this? Do you like going in this direction? Is it going to help you to remember to do these things?
No.
Think about the question.
It was Bednar's fault, but anyway.
Yeah.
He's just badgering him.
Yeah.
It was horrible.
And at no point was the atonement even part of the equation as to how, you know, what role Jesus plays in keeping you out of the devil's territory. And because if you start talking about Jesus and the atonement, you take away a lot of that fear. That,
right.
You know,
if the atonement was important, he would have had a third party come in and bash him from behind on the head to free him from the control of the devil so he can get back on the carpet, on the rug.
Yeah, but that's an out. That's it's true. The atonement was missing in action. It's like, don't even cross over here. Mormons don't make mistakes, you know.
This isn't
sin.
New. There's a quote, and I need to find it so it can be, if it can be spliced in correctly, because I want to get it just right. But I remember having it in my scriptures on my mission, and I think it was by Harold B. Lee that said, you know, I think we talk too much about the ease of repentance and the atonement. What we need to be emphasizing to the youth is the terror and the consequence of sin. And I shit you not, at the time as a missionary, I, you know, thought that was just so inspiring. That's right. It's, yeah. It can't just be easy. We can't just repent just willy-nilly. But
right.
But this is what Bednar's taking. But he doesn't even say, oh, yeah, but here's, you know, do better, try to be better, repent. There's redemption. We can come forward. No, there is no hope for this kid, and for that's what the object lesson is. At some point, once there is a point of no return, and yeah. You are in Satan's power.
You will be bear hugged by the devil.
That's just so weird.
Yeah. Ugh. You know, Matt, that quote that you were reciting, it reminds me when I was probably 13 years old, I was listening to a talk in church from one of my friend's dads, and he started talking about how he was listening to the radio, what his kids were listening, and there was this song that came on the radio called Don't Worry, Be Happy.
In every life we have some trouble, but when you worry you make it double. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy.
You know,
Bobby McFerrin.
Bobby McFerrin. And I was thinking, oh, yeah, that is kind of a cool message about, you know, in the church, you just don't have to worry. You just have to be happy. And I thought that was the direction that he was going to take his talk. But he went the complete opposite direction. And he said, listen to the crap messages that our kids are getting in the music today. Don't worry, be happy. That's like eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow you shall die. And they think that this is acceptable. And I remember thinking, wow, I think he's wrong on this. I think we really shouldn't worry. We should be happy because of the atonement, because of Jesus, you know. And then I remember one other thing that... This might not be exactly related, but my dad at one point was I was asking him if he was content with something. He's like, I'm never content. I can't be content. You can never be content where you are. And it's almost like this, we always need to be in a state of fear and concern and vigilance, because as soon as you let your guard down, that's exactly when the devil comes in and has you in his power. You're in his territory, and Bednar's got his arms wrapped around you.
You just remember what it was like to be over there. Okay? Does that make sense? Okay. You don't want to be there.
And there's no escape.
There's no escape.
All I can think of, this kid is talking about not reading your scriptures, but if he's not already, in a couple of years, he's going to be whacking off. And there is going to, I mean, he is going to just devolve into just panic and terror because he's not going to be able to stop. And what a horrible message that sends.
Yeah.
So do you think the church, there's already, this is minimal, and you know, I don't want to be so naive to suggest that me seeing it in my Facebook feed means that much, but there's some backlash. Even, you know, I guess, what do we call them, liberal Mormons are not happy with this. Is this the type of thing that in retrospect the church is going to regret releasing, or do you think they're going to stand strong and this thing's going to stay on the website, you know, flag flying for all to see for as a pinnacle of an example? I don't know. I'm just wondering if they're going to backtrack at all, or if this is the way it is, and that's
it'll stay.
Is it on LDS.org right now?
It's on Deseret News.
I don't think so. I think they'll back off. Didn't they take that Not Even Once book out of print because of the basically the same message and the backlash that kids book sent?
Yeah, it seemed like they do these things, like they don't say anything or apologize or do anything public. It's just all of a sudden it's harder to find things, and you think that's going to happen?
Quiet. Yeah, and this is not that broad, you know, broadly broadcast where a lot of people know. This is so bad, I very much wanted to just privately send a couple of my friends who I really respect and like, but that are extremely devout, and say, hey, am I just past feeling where I can't see anything good? Explain to me how you view this, because it just seems that over the top and bad, and so it's so anti-Christian, it's so anti-Christ and atonement.
Yeah, but not just that. It's like I'm imagining that kid was my kid, and I'm just visioning myself run down, just push Bednar, say, get the hell away from my son. He's crying, you dick. Yeah. What the hell are you doing?
I actually didn't think it was that bad, because the kid gets up, and he's already kind of crying real early on before they get into the lesson. So I just took it as this is a shy, introverted kid who's kind of embarrassed and try, you know, kind of feeling what he thinks is the spirit, and this is the reaction you're supposed to have.
Everyone in the room thought. I'm sure that's the Mormon interpretation. Is like, what are you talking about? He's overcome by the spirit, and I think that's bullshit. To be honest,
I looked at another clip, because there was another one where a teenage girl asked Bednar, said, "Considering you're in a special witness of Jesus Christ, what is your favorite part about Christ's character, or something like that?" And I thought it was. I thought for a second she was going to say, so what was it like meeting Jesus? What's it, you know? did you get to see his scars? I kind of felt like she wanted to ask that, but she didn't. Oh.
What did he say? Was his
He used the Garden of Gethsemane, sweat from every pore. That he said, not it wasn't just one episode of his life that's profound and special. Blah blah blah. And he just kind of ran through like a semi-history lesson of Christ.
Okay. Yeah, and well, okay. So he went through all that suffering for what? According to his previous object lesson.
So that we can repent and suffer before Christ's atonement kicks in.
When I was a kid, I had a bishop who was just a good guy, and a very hardcore military branch president came in and was just couldn't believe that we were passing the sacrament in colored shirts and that I was blessing the sacrament with an earring. And he approached my bishop and said, "This has to change." And my bishop's response was, "Well, I'm just kind of glad they're here." And then I also, in the same ward, I had a priest leader who encouraged me to go on a mission. But he said, "Don't worry about teaching. Just try to help people." And then right before I left, he says, "By the way, you're going to find a lot of skeletons in the church's closet. Just help people." So I like to think that there are more people out there willing to do that for kids. And by the way, I came out of when I left the church, that priest advisor also turned out he's a non-believer. And I went to him and I said, "What the hell, man? Why didn't you tell me this?" He's like, "You got to figure it out for yourself. I'm not going to be that guy who tells kids, by the way, your church is wrong. They're going to figure it out for themselves." So these guys were in my lives who I thought were the most spiritual influence. But what it turns out, they were just in my life for what was good for me. And I just hope there's more people out there in the church. I think there really are. There is some hope that I have for Lindsay's kid and others people's kids out there, that they will have leaders like I had.
That's true. That's cool. But you have to acknowledge the fact that you got lucky. I mean, it is just a roll of the dice whether you get leaders like that. Yeah,
that's absolutely true. Because I could have that military branch president guy could have been in charge somewhere where other kids are. And, you know, pity be that kid.
Yeah, exactly.
That's all I got.
Body out an old man, poor man, bleeding with the eyes. Gonna make you some peace someday. You got mud on your face.
First steps
you big
in the process of changing a cucumber into a pickle are preparing and cleaning. I remember many hours spent on the back porch of my home removing stems from and scrubbing dirt off of the cucumbers we had picked. My mom was very particular about the preparing and cleaning of the cucumbers. She had high standards of cleanliness, and she always inspected my work to make sure this important task was properly completed. The next steps in this process of change are immersing and saturating the cucumbers in salt brine for an extended period of time. To prepare the brine, my mom always used a recipe she learned from her mother, a recipe with special ingredients and precise procedures. Cucumbers can only become pickles if they are totally and completely immersed in the brine for the prescribed time period.